Hello, everyone, and welcome back to a new episode of the TFDI podcast. This is a special episode since it's been exactly a year since the Trade Finance Distribution Initiative launched this monthly podcast. So happy birthday to us. And in addition, this is also the first podcast of the year 2022. And to celebrate this new year, we have decided to do a retrospective on the past 12 months of trade finance distribution. And I'm delighted to tell you that we have the perfect guest for that. Maurice Jacquet is currently Global Head of Distribution at Deutsche Bank, and he has over 15 years of experience in loan syndication and trade finance distribution. So I know he is well-placed to give us his insights on recent trends. Welcome, Maurice. Thank you for being here and Happy New Year.
Hi, Melody.
So after all the disruption caused by the COVID-19 pandemic in 2020, in what state would you say that the trade finance sector began the year 2021?
I think there's a couple of points I would like to mention. First of all, I mean, the COVID impact in a great majority has been digested. I think that there was a lot of learning by doing, a lot of wait and see. But in reality, if you look retrospectively to the results of 2021 and what we see in the pipe for 2022, it looks like in most of the cases, we're back to pre-COVID times. Obviously, there are a couple of specificities when I'm saying this, especially on the trade side. First of all, oil and gas is still under interesting scrutiny, but this is more driven by the ESG component than actually the pandemic per se. Secondly, I think that there are sectors that are still a bit complicated for obvious reasons, and that's linked to the sectors still affected by pandemic. Although you could see that in some of the sectors, deals were done, so it's not like it's dead. It's a bit more complicated. It's a bit longer. There was a price effect on some of them, but if you look at anything which is linked to transportation, anything which is the industry, hospitality, and so on and so forth, obviously they are still suffering. And the last point I wanted to flag, which is more general trend outside the COVID outcome, is the fact that time, lead time between origination, structuring, and closing of a deal is still quite long. And I think this is driven by three factors. One is that you still have a lot of people working from home. There's a lot of process that needs to go through, which are going to take more time. The due diligence is likely to take more time in COVID time than no COVID time, of course. The second point, I think, is that there's been a lot of scrutiny also in most of the banks to maybe streamline and reassess their priorities. So that takes a bit of time as well in terms of stunt deals coming to fruition. And the third one is the fact that the processes have increased because you have a lot of exogenous factors that are taken into consideration. You have new committees, you have new approvals, you've got the ESG angle, you've got the LIBOR replacement, you have all these kind of things that by definition are going to actually put a bit of delay in things getting reviewed, approved, and therefore signed. But all in all, I think the pandemic is one of the factors. And I think if I look just at the pandemic view, I think I would say most of it has been digested. And frankly, we're in a much, much better position than what we have anticipated, obviously in 19, but also in 20.
That's great. Okay. So you mentioned that the pandemic is just one of the factors that influenced the market in the past year. What other events influenced it and in what ways then?
I think you still have the same one as before. They take maybe a bit more toll if you look at where we are. First of all, obviously the credit risk, and that is linked to the pandemic, because when you're in sectors are affected, that actually has an impact for sure. But if you put that aside, you have the political risk, which keeps on reminding itself from time to time. Situation in some part of the world at the moment meant that it's a bit more complicated. So I think people know how to deal with it, but clearly you have more questions to be answered, you have more due diligence to be done, and so on and so forth. You have anything which is linked to what I mentioned early on in terms of regulatory changes. So the LIBOR replacement, for instance, is one of them. It's not the only one, it's one of them. You have also the banks streamlining the strategy, as I mentioned early on, which meant that some of the banks are exiting some of the markets. That's true also for the underwriters or the PRI market, for instance. So that creates a bit of I won't say vacuum, because all the deals are being done and being placed. So it's not as if we're losing liquidity, but what it means simply is that it's a bit of change there. And of course, the ESG component, which keeps on growing, which means that a lot of the deals are going through that angle as well. It's not a novelty. It's been there for quite some time, but it's maybe more visible because it's more communicated on. And of course, that means extra covenants, extra reviews, extra assessments, and so on and so forth. So I think it's more all these points are to a longer, I would say, execution rather than a massive change in the market, in my view.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I see. And looking at offer and demand for the distribution of trade finance assets in the past year, what sort of trends did you notice, and were there any challenges to be tackled in 2021?
Okay, I think a couple of points there again. First of all, if you look at the syndicated deal, most, if not all of them, have been oversubscribed, which shows that actually there is liquidity, there is appetite, and the banks are still there. If you look a bit more into detail, you see some banks coming in and some banks stepping out, but that's, I would say, the normal state of the business. On the insurance side, you see also that some of the PRI have exited the market, some of them officially, some of them less officially, but the result is that that has created vacuum. Comparatively, new underwriters have stepped in. So and that liquidity that is left, if you want, often has been filled. And I'm not aware of actually a massive disruption on the PRI market. I think the most important or most noticeable, rather important trend is what we call the new type investors, either funds or new ways of actually structuring, repackaging and selling assets. And that's function of liquidity. So historically, there was a bit of a price mismatch between the expectation from this kind of investors and the deals and the way the deals were paid. I think that mismatch has resolved, or at least there is convergence, which means that you see some of those investors more and more in certain deals. So it's not yet, I would say, a massive part of the liquidity. But clearly, this is something which is being investigated. And that means that, of course, some of the deals have been repacked to fit with what the kind of asset they want to see. But it also means that from a pricing perspective, the gap that there used to be is actually reducing significantly. So we'll see if 2022 will actually show a much bigger convergence. But that's my bet.
What are the drivers that are leading to the resolution of this price mismatch that you mentioned?
I think everybody is going to the same direction. In reality, if you look at what makes a deal successful is when the deal can be placed and the client gets the liquidity he needs at the cheapest price he can achieve. So when I mentioned that the deal being oversubscribed, this is true. And some of the deals are quite aggressively priced if you look at maybe where they were 1 year ago, 2 years ago, 3 years ago. So on one side, you have that driver. On the other side, you have a pool of liquidity that can be assessed. And that pool of liquidity needs certain characteristics to be actually made available. One of the components is pricing, but it's not the only one. As I said, the format is quite important as well. You have some repack. You have some investors that can only take notes. I mean, their ratings, the issues, the liquidity, mark to market, plenty of things like that. And I think that what has changed is the fact that there is a better knowledge on the underlying deals, which means that maybe also a better way of pricing them. You price structure, you price relationship, you price a credit risk. You don't necessarily use the same benchmark as before. So on one side, that actually means that the requirement may be less wide than before. And on the other hand, especially with pandemic, we've seen some of the assets simply going up in price. So I think this is when I mentioned convergence, it means that it's not working for every single market or every type of assets, but I think there are deals on which you see that coming more and more often. And frankly, the driver is liquidity. When you have liquidity and people try to apply the liquidity and they look at what's available and they're making some comparisons in terms of returns, type of assets and what they can actually place where. And historically, it's been more complicated for the trade finance side, but it's getting less and less complicated. So you see more and more of those investors coming.
Mm-hmm. So how do you expect this market, the trade finance distribution market, to evolve in the year ahead? Now that we're starting 2022, you said that the pandemic, the shock of the pandemic has pretty much been absorbed, and the market is back to where it was before, or at least is in a good place. Do you foresee any specific trends or events to influence the growth of the distribution of trade finance assets in the coming year?
I think that, okay, it's difficult because I don't have a crystal ball. I think the main issue, and it's not even an issue, I think the political risk is always what makes banks a bit uncomfortable. But as I said, especially if you've been in the market for quite some time, like some people in my team, or we've seen so many of the cycles that yes, there could be times where it is getting a bit tense, but in reality, it's always been absorbed. So I think from that standpoint, I don't see massive disruption. And especially if you look at what COVID brought to the table, if you go backwards and look where we were early 19, or even during 19, early 20, we're wondering how the year would look like, how the assets would be looking like, whether it would be a lot of default. I mean, and in reality, the whole system did stand up. There was no issues. Well, there was issues, but I mean, they were all understandable. So from that standpoint, there was a life test that actually sent a lot of shock in the system, and the system still worked. So I'm quite positive about the absorption of forthcoming shocks. So of course, you still have the same old, I would say, question mark you may have on certain deals, on the regulatory environment that may change, the appetite of some banks that may change, the arbitration between different class of assets. But nothing of that is new. I mean, it's always been there. I think what is important to me is actually this new type of investors, and also, which is not necessarily linked yet to what I'm referring to, but will have a big greater impact, is also the new fintechs coming in, proposing some service on the value chain. If you look at trade, for instance. At the moment, this is quite limited to some type of class of assets, and nobody knows if it's going to expand or not. But we've seen some class of assets actually moving in terms of placement from banks to platforms, and the banks are actually playing on those platforms anyway. So it's maybe just a change of market. But the reality is that all this disruption will be stronger in the future. Whether this is a threat or not, it's difficult to say. At the end of the day, there will be some choice to be made. Some banks will stay in the market, some of that will change markets, some banks will follow, others will decide to actually develop somewhere else. It's very difficult to say. So for me, if I want to summarize this, A, I'm quite positive. B, I think that the shocks we went through have shown there's some resilience in the bank market. And C, we can't be complacent, but even when we see new investors coming, a new platform, and the role of the bank is still quite important. So I'm not worried.
You see, that's great. It's a good way to start the year.
It has to be.
So to end the podcast, I like to ask my guests to share their latest inspiration. And I think it's even more relevant when it's the first podcast of the year. So as we embark onto a new year, is there any article or book or podcast outside of this one that you'd like to recommend to your listeners?
Now, what I want to say, because it's beginning of the year, I think one point I want to say has got nothing to do with your question, but the answer you're expecting, but I think something which is important. I think one lesson to take out of the pandemic is the strengths of the way the way banks organize, and the way within the bank we work as team. What has been very comforting for me is to see that despite being stuck in different places and not seeing people and so forth, the human factor of what we're doing in trade has actually, if anything, be reinforced. And that's true with clients, because all of a sudden you start to have different type of conversation with clients, investors, but also people. So rather than saying something which is inspiring, what I came out of this 2 years or even year is a great faith in the human factor in what we're doing. Yes, it's great to have like systems that make less mistakes, a blockchain, a limitation of frauds and whatever. But what I think came out of all what we went through is the importance of the human relationship. And I'm not saying intra-banks, also with people and so on and so forth. And to me, this is what maybe we tend to forget at times. And this is what, especially coming out of like a year end and everybody hopefully was able to meet the family that haven't seen for quite some time, travel again, and so on and so forth. And that aspect to me is quite important. And it is what make that job or that type of, I would say, like activity worthwhile. So more than a podcast or a book that were inspiring, to me, the inspiration has been certain people in the team that struggle personally or professionally and did it with a smile, not complaining. And when you see this kind of, I would say, dedication and result, I mean, yeah, we should be grateful and embrace 2022 and let's bring it on and deliver. So I know it's not a book, it's not a podcast.
No, but it's great. People are an inspiration. It's even better.
And yeah. I think it's important to remind that maybe it sounds very cliche, but frankly, I mean, some of the situations we've been exposed to,
yeah,
you have to say,
yeah, I think it's something some we all realize. Really, yeah.
And it's got nothing to do with seniority, expense, or whatever. It's about the human factor, the character, and the resilience. And that's impressive.
Yeah. That's great. Well, I think that's a wonderful way to end this podcast. So thank you so much for all your insights. And I'll also take this time to thank our listeners and invite you to leave any comments or questions you have in the comments section. And thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.